Oba threw the stone down at the board with enough force to be certain that it would roll well beyond the board and prove her wrong. As the stone left his hand, lightning flashed so hard that he flinched and looked up, fearing it was blasting through the roof. Thunder crashed on its heels, shaking the house. The strike felt like it rattled his bones. But then it was over, and the only sound was the rain drumming against the undamaged roof and windows. Oba grinned in relief and looked down, only to see the cursed stone sitting in the exact same place it had come to rest the three times before. He jumped up as if he'd been bitten by a snake. He rubbed his sweating palms against his thighs. "A trick," he said. "It's just a trick. You're a sorceress and you're just doing magic tricks."
"You are the one who has done the trick, Oba. You are the one who invited his darkness into your soul."
"And what if I have?"
She smiled at his admission. "You may listen to the voice, Oba, but you are not the one. You are merely his servant, no more. He must choose another if he is to bring darkness upon the world."
"You don't know what you're talking about."
"Oh, but I do. You may be a hole in the world, but you are missing a necessary ingredient."
"And what would that be?"
"Grushteva." Oba felt the hair at the back of his neck stiffen. While he didn't recognize the specific word, the source was indisputable. The idiosyncratic nature of the word belonged solely to the voice.
"A senseless word. It means nothing."
She regarded him for a time with a look that he feared, because it seemed to hold a world of forbidden knowledge. By the cast of iron resolve in her eyes, he knew that no mere blade would gain that knowledge for him. "A long time ago in a faraway place," she said in her quiet voice, "another sorceress revealed to me a bit of the Keeper's tongue. That is one of his words, in his primordial language. You would not have heard it unless you were the right one. Grushteva. It means vengeance. You are not the one he has chosen."
Oba thought she might be taunting him. "You don't know what words I've heard or anything about it. I'm the son of Darkenral, a rightful heir. You don't know anything about what I hear. I will have power you can only imagine."
"Free will is forfeit when dealing with the Keeper. You have sold what is yours alone and priceless, for nothing but ashes. You have sold yourself into the worst kind of slavery, Oba, in return for nothing more than the illusion of self-worth. You have no say in what is to be. You are not the one, it is another." She wiped the sweat from her brow. "And that much of it is yet to be decided."
"Now you presume to think you can alter the course of what I have wrought? Dictate what shall be?"
Oba's own words surprised him.
They'd seemed to come out before he thought to say them.
"Such things are not amenable to the likes of me," she admitted. "I learned at the Palace of the Prophets not to meddle in that which is above me and ungovernable. The grand scheme of life and death are the rightful province of the Creator and the Keeper." She seemed contented behind a sly expression. "But I am not above exercising my free will."
He'd heard enough. She was only trying to stall, to confuse him. For some reason, he couldn't make his racing heart slow. "What are holes in the world?"
"They are the end of the likes of me," she said. "They are the end of everything I know."
It was just like a sorceress to answer with a senseless riddle. "Who are the other stones?" he demanded.
At last, she turned her formidable eyes from him to look down at the other stones. Her movements seemed oddly jerky. Her slender fingers selected one of the stones. As she lifted it, she paused to put her other hand across her middle. Oba realized that she was in pain. She was trying her best to cover it, but she couldn't cover it now. The sweat beading her brow was from pain. The agony came out in a low moan. Oba watched with fascination. Then it seemed to ebb some. With great effort, she straightened her posture and returned her attention to what she had been doing. She held out her hand, palm up, with the stone sitting in the center.
"This one," she said, her breathing labored now. is me.
You? That stone is you? She nodded as she cast it at the board without even looking. The stone tumbled to a stop, this time without the accompaniment of lightning and thunder. Oba felt relieved, even a little foolish, that he had been so rattled by that before. He smiled now. It was just a silly board game, and he was invincible. The stone had come to rest at one corner of the square that lay within the two circles. He gestured. "So what does that mean?"
"Protector," she managed through a shallow pant.
Her trembling fingers gathered up the stone. She lifted her hand up before him and opened her slender fingers. The stone, her stone, rested in the center of her palm. Her eyes were fixed on his. As Oba watched, the stone crumbled to ash in her palm.
"Why did it do that?"
he whispered, his eyes going wide. Althea didn't answer. Instead, she slumped and then toppled over. Her arms sprawled out before her, her legs to the side. The ash that had been a stone scattered in a dark smear across the floor. Oba leaped to his feet. His goosebumps were back. He had seen enough people die to know that Althea was dead. Rending slashes of thunderous lightning ignited, lacing the sky with violent slashes of light that lanced in through the windows, throwing blinding white light across the dead sorceress. Sweat trickled down his temple and over his cheek. Oba stood staring at the body for a long moment, and then he ran. Chapter 38. Panting and nearly spent from the effort, Oba stumbled out of the thick vegetation into the meadow. He squinted around in the sudden bright light. He was spooked, hungry, thirsty, weary, and in a mood to tear the little thief limb from limb. The meadow was empty.
"Clovis!"
His roar came back to him in an empty echo.
"Clovis! Where are you?"
Only the moan of the wind between the towering rock walls answered. Oba wondered if the thief might be nervous, might be reluctant to come out, worried that Oba might have discovered his fortune missing and suspect the truth of what had happened.
"Clovis, come here! We need to leave! I must get back to the palace at once! Clovis!"
Oba waited, his chest heaving, listening for an answer. With fists at his sides, he again bellowed the little thief's name into the cold afternoon air. When no answer came, he fell to his knees beside the fire Clovis had started that morning. He thrust his fingers into the powdery gray ash. It hadn't rained up in the meadow, but the ashes were ice cold. Oba stood, staring up the narrow defile through which they had ridden in early that morning. The cold breeze blowing across the empty meadow ruffled his hair. With both hands, Oba ran his fingers back through his hair, almost as if to keep his head from bursting as the awful truth settled in. He realized that Clovis had not buried the money purse he'd stolen. That had never been his plan. He'd taken the money and run as soon as Oba had gone down into the swamp. He'd run with Oba's fortune, not buried it. With a sick, empty, sinking feeling, Oba understood then the full extent of what had really happened. No one ever went in the swamp by this back way. Clovis had talked him into it and guided him there because he believed Oba would perish in the treacherous swamp. Clovis had been confident that Oba would become lost, and the swamp would swallow him if the monster supposedly guarding Althea's back didn't snare him first. Clovis had felt no need to bury the money. He figured Oba was dead. Clovis was gone, and he had Oba's fortune. But Oba was invincible. He had survived the swamp. He had bested the snake. No monsters had dared come out to challenge him after that. Clovis had probably thought that even if the swamp didn't finish his benefactor, there were two other mortal dangers he could count on. Althea hadn't invited Oba in. Clovis had probably figured that she would not take kindly to uninvited guests. Sorceresses rarely did. And they had deadly reputations. But Clovis had not anticipated Oba being invincible. That left the thief only one safeguard against Oba's wrath, and that one was a problem, the Azrith Plains. Oba was stranded in a desolate place. He had no food. Water was nearby, but he had no means to take it with him. He had no horse. He had even left his wool jacket, unnecessary in a swamp, with the underhanded little hawker. Walking out of this place without supplies exposed to winter's weather would finish anyone who somehow managed to survive the swamp and Althea. Oba couldn't make his feet move. He knew that, given his situation, if he struck out and tried to walk back, he would die. Despite the cold, he could feel sweat running down his neck. His head was pounding. Oba turned and stared back down into the swamp. There would be things back at Althea's house, food, clothing, and surely something in which he could carry water. Oba had spent his life making do. He could make a pack, at least a pack good enough to get him back to the palace. He could put together a supply of food from the sorceress's house. She wouldn't be there alone and crippled without food on hand. Her husband would be back, but maybe not for days. He would have left food. Oba could wear layers of clothing to keep himself warm enough to make the trek across the bitterly cold plains. Althea said her husband went to the palace. He would have warm clothes to cross the Azrith Plains, and might have left extra clothes at the house. Even if they didn't fit, Oba could make do. There would be blankets he could take in a pack and wear as a cloak. There was always the possibility, though, that the husband might come back sooner. By the lack of a trail on this side, he would most likely come in the wide path from the other side of the swamp. He could already be there and have discovered his wife's body. Oba wasn't really concerned about that, though. He could deal with the nuisance of a grieving husband. Maybe the man would even be pleased to be out from under the obligation of having to care for a petulant, crippled wife. What good was she, anyway? The man should be glad to be rid of her. He might offer Oba a drink to help him celebrate his liberation. Oba didn't feel like celebrating, though. Althea had pulled some evil trick and denied him the pleasure he had so looked forward to, the pleasure he deserved after his long and difficult journey. Oba sighed at how trying sorceresses could be. At least she could provide him with what he needed in order to get back to his ancestral home. But when he got back to the people's palace, he would have no money, unless he could find Clovis. Oba knew that was a thin hope. Clovis had Oba's hard-earned fortune now, and might well have decided to travel to fine places, wantonly spending his ill-gotten gain. The little thief was likely to be long gone. Oba didn't have a copper penny. How was he to survive? He couldn't go back to that pauper's life, a life like the one he had had with his mother, not now, not after he had discovered that he was a Rawl, almost royalty. He couldn't go back to his old life. He wouldn't. Simmering with anger, Oba plunged back down the spine of rock. It was getting late in the day. He had no time to waste. Oba didn't touch the corpse. He wasn't at all queasy about the dead. Quite the contrary. The dead fascinated him. He had spent a great deal of time with dead bodies, but this woman gave him the shivers. Even dead, she seemed to watch him as he searched her house, throwing clothes and supplies in a pile in the center of the room. There was something profane, sinful, about the woman sprawled on the floor. Even the flies buzzing around the room didn't light on her. Lathea had been troublesome, but this woman was different. Althea had pulled some evil trick and denied him the answers he'd deserved after his long and difficult journey. Oba fumed at how trying sorceresses could be. At least she could provide him with what he needed in order to get back to his ancestral home. There was something unholy about this woman. She had been able to look right into him. Lathea had never been able to do that. Of course, he had once thought she could, but she couldn't. Not really. This woman could. She could see the voice in him. Oba wasn't sure if he was safe around her, even if she was dead. Since he was invincible, it was probably only his fertile imagination he knew, but a person couldn't be too cautious. In the bedroom, he found warm wool shirts. They were not nearly large enough, but by ripping out some of the seams a little here or a little there, he could get them on. Once he was satisfied with his alterations, he threw the item of clothing on the pile. They would be good enough to keep him warm. He added blankets and shirts to the pile in the center of the main room. Annoyed that the tardy husband hadn't returned, and to distract his mind from the smug dead woman who just lay there watching him work, Oba laid plans to kill someone before he went crazy. Maybe a catty woman, one who had those vicious scowl lines around her eyes, like his mother had. He needed to make someone pay for all the trouble he had been through. It wasn't fair. It wasn't. It was already dark outside. He had to light an oil lamp in order to continue his search. Oba was in luck. In a lower cupboard, he found a water skin. On his hands and knees, he rummaged through a collection of odd scraps of cloth, cups with cracks, broken cooking tools, and a supply of wax and wick. From the back, he pulled out a small roll of canvas. He tested its strength and decided he could stitch a pack from it. There was material from clothes around he could use to make straps. A sewing kit was handy enough on a low shelf nearby. He had noticed that such useful things were on low shelves where the crippled sorceress with the evil eyes could get to them. A sorceress without magic? Not likely. She was jealous because the voice chose him and not her. She was up to something. He knew it would take him some time to collect everything and stitch together a pack for his supplies. He couldn't leave at night. It would be impossible to make it out through the swamp at night. He was invincible, not stupid. With the oil lamp close by, he sat at the workbench and started in on sewing himself a pack. Althea watched him from the floor in the main room. She was a sorceress, so he knew it would do no good to throw a blanket over her head. If she could watch him all the way from the world of the dead, a mere blanket wasn't going to blind her dead eyes. He would just have to be satisfied to have her watch while he worked. When he had the pack finished and tested to his satisfaction, he set it on the bench and started packing it with food and clothing. She had dried fruit and jerky, along with sausages and cheese. There were biscuits that would be easy enough to carry. He didn't bother with pots or food that had to be cooked because he knew there was nothing on the Azrith Plains from which to build a fire, and he certainly wasn't going to be able to lug firewood along. He'd travel light and swiftly. He hoped it would only take him a few days to reach the palace. What he would do once he reached the palace, how he would survive without money, he didn't know. He briefly considered stealing it, but rejected the idea. He wasn't a thief, and wouldn't lower himself to being a criminal. He wasn't sure how he would get by at the palace. He only knew he had to get there. When he had finished putting together what he would take, his eyes were drooping, and he was yawning every few minutes. He was sweating from all his work and from the heat of the foul swamp. Even at night, the place was miserable. He didn't know how the know-it-all sorceress could stand to live in such a place. No wonder her husband went off to the palace. The man was probably downing ales and moaning to his chums about having to go back to his swamp wife. Oba didn't like the idea of sleeping in the same house with the sorceress, but she was dead after all. He still didn't trust her, though. She might be up to some trick. He yawned again and wiped sweat from his brow. There were two well-stuffed sleeping pallets close together on the floor in the bedroom. One was neatly made, the other was less orderly. Judging from the tidy workbench, the neatly made bed was likely the husband's and the other Althea's. Since she was dead on the floor, way in the other room, he didn't feel quite so uneasy about sleeping on a nice, soft pallet. The husband wasn't going to be coming back home in the dark, so Oba wasn't worried about waking to a madman at his throat. Still, he thought it best if he wedged a chair against the door lever before he retired for the night. With the house all secured, he yawned, ready for bed. On his way by, Oba gave Althea the cold shoulder. Oba fell right off to sleep, but it was a fitful slumber. Dreams haunted him. It was hot in the swamp house. Since it was winter everywhere else, he hadn't gotten accustomed to such sudden sultry heat. Outside, bugs kept up a steady buzzing while night animals hooted and called. Oba tossed and turned, trying to get away from the sorceress's haunting gaze and knowing smile. They seemed to follow him, no matter which way he turned, watching him, not letting him sleep soundly. He woke for good just after it had begun to get light out. He was in Althea's bed. In a rush to untangle himself from the covers and escape her bed, he rolled over onto his hands and knees. His weight abruptly pushed his hand through the stuffed bedding. In wild alarm, Oba threw back the bedding and overturned the pallet to see what vile trick she had planted for him. She had known he was coming to see her. She was up to something. Under where her pallet had been resting, he saw that a floorboard was loose. That was all it was, a floorboard that had pivoted. Oba frowned in suspicion. A close inspection revealed that the plank had pins in the middle so it would seesaw. With one careful finger, he pushed the sunken end farther down. The other end of the board rose up. A compartment under the board contained a wooden box. He lifted out the box and tried to open it, but it was locked somehow. There was no hole for a key, and no readily apparent lid, so there was probably some trick to opening it. It was heavy. When he shook it, it made only a muffled sound from inside. It might have simply been a weighted weapon the crippled woman kept under her bed in case she was attacked in the night by a snake or something. With the box in his meaty hand, Oba shuffled to the workbench. He sat on the stool and leaned close. As he selected a chisel and mallet, he noticed that the sorceress was still on the floor in the other room, watching.
"What's in the box?"
he called to her. Of course she didn't answer. She had no intention of being cooperative. If she had been cooperative, she would have answered all his questions instead of dropping dead after performing her stone-to-ash trick. It gave him shivers just remembering it. Something about the entire encounter had been more than he wanted to contemplate. Oba used the chisel to pry on the box. He tested every joint, but it wouldn't open. He hammered on it with the mallet, but he only succeeded in breaking the mallet's handle. He sighed, deciding that it was probably just a weighted weapon Althea kept for defense. He rose from the bench to go gather his supplies and check that he had everything. He'd had enough of the odd goings-on and the puzzling things she'd left. He needed to be on his way. Oba paused then and turned back at some inner urging. If the heavy box was a weapon, she would have kept it easily at hand. Something about this box was important, or it wouldn't be hidden under a floorboard. Something inside told him so. Resolving to get into the box, he again sat at the bench and selected a narrower chisel and another mallet. He worked the sharp blade between a lengthwise joint near the edge. Sweat dripping off the end of his nose, he grunted with the effort of whacking at the end of the chisel handle, trying to open the joint to see if it was just lead weight inside. All of a sudden, wood split with a loud snap and the box broke open. Gold and silver coins spilled out like guts from a carp. Oba stood staring at the glut of gold heaped on the bench. The box hadn't rattled only because it had been packed full. There was a fortune, a real fortune. Well, wasn't that just something? There had to be 20 times as much gold as the little weasel Clovis had stolen from him. Oba had thought that poverty had been inflicted upon him by the cowardly little thief, and it turned out he was richer than ever, richer even than his wildest dreams. He truly was invincible. He had suffered through adversity and misfortune that would have defeated a lesser man, and fate had justly rewarded him for all his struggles. He knew that this could be nothing other than divine direction. Oba smiled across the room at the woman who lay there watching his triumph. In the drawers of the bench, he found tools kept in pouches. There were three nice leather pouches containing finely crafted beading planes. The leather pouches were probably used to keep the sharp edges on the blades from being dinged and dulled. A cloth pouch held a set of dividers. Another pouch held rosin. While still others held various odd tools, the husband was exceptionally orderly. Life with his swamp wife had probably driven him mad. Oba wiped sweat from his eyes and then scooped all the coins together in the center of the bench. He divided them up into equal piles, carefully counting each pile out so he would know exactly how much money he had earned. Finished counting, he filled the leather and cloth pouches, putting one in each pocket. For safety's sake, he tied each pouch with two thongs going in different directions to different belt loops. He tied a smaller purse around each leg, letting them rest inside the tops of his boots. He opened his trousers and secured several of the heaviest purses inside, where no one could get to them. He reminded himself that he would have to be cautious of passionate ladies with friendly hands, lest they come up with more than he wished to give them. Oba had learned his lesson. From now on, he wouldn't keep his fortune altogether. A man as wealthy as he had to protect his holdings. The world was full of thieves. Chapter 39. Oba trudged at last into the outer fringes of the open-air market. After the isolation of the barren plains, the raucous swirl of activity was disorienting. Ordinarily, he would be intrigued by all the goings-on, but this time he paid little heed. He had learned before that rooms could be rented up in the palace. That was what he wanted, to get up into the people's palace and get himself a proper room, one that was quiet. After some good food and rest to recover his strength, he would buy some new clothes and then have a look around. But now, he only wanted the quiet room and the rest. For some reason, the thought of food sickened him. It seemed somewhat inappropriate to him that a Rawl should lower himself to renting a room in his own ancestral home, but he would have to deal with that matter later. Now, he just wanted to lie down. His head was pounding. His eyes hurt every time he turned them to look at something. So, as he plodded along with his head hanging, he tried to limit his focus to the patch of dusty ground immediately before his feet. He had made the long journey from the miserable swamp to the palace by sheer force of will. Despite the cold, he was sweating. He probably had been too wary of the cold weather he would encounter crossing the Azeroth Plains, and, with all the shirts he was wearing, had overdressed for it. After all, with spring getting closer, it wasn't as cold as it had been in the depths of winter when his lunatic mother had saddled him with the humiliating task of chipping away at the mounds of frozen muck. Oba dug at a wad of clothing bunching uncomfortably under his armpit. The shirts had been too small for him, so he had had to rip out seams here and there to get them on. Some of the sleeves had come apart on his long trek across the windswept plain, and had ridden up his arm under the outer layers that now hung like tattered flags. His canvas pack, made in such haste, was coming apart too, so that the corners of the dark wool blanket hung down, flapping behind him as he walked. With all the different colors of cloth showing through the various torn layers and the brown woolen blanket he wore as a cloak, he mused that he must look like a beggar. He was probably wealthy enough to buy the entire market a dozen times over. He would buy some fine clothes later. First, he needed a quiet room and a good long rest. No food, though. He definitely didn't feel like eating anything. He ached all over. Even blinking was painful. But it was his gut that was in particular agony. When he had been here before, the savory aromas of cooking had made his mouth water. Now the tendrils of smoke from cooking fires nauseated him. He wondered if it was because he had more refined tastes now. He thought that maybe if he went up into the palace, he could get himself something mild to eat. The thought failed to rally his appetite. He wasn't hungry, just tired. Eyes drooping, Oba slogged onward through the makeshift streets of the open-air market. He aimed himself at the plateau towering over them. The pack on his back felt as if it weighed as much as three good-sized men. Probably some trick of the swamp witch, some spell she had cast. Knowing he was on his way to her place, She had probably put some magic lead weights in her sausages. The thought of sausages made his stomach roil. Peering up at the palace, shining in the sunlight far overhead as he walked, he accidentally blundered into someone, driving a grunt from their lungs. Oba was just about to kick the annoying obstacle out of his path when the hunched bundle of rags wheeled to growl a curse. It was Clovis. Before Oba could snatch him, Clovis scrambled out from underfoot and dove between two older men passing by. Oba, right behind him, but being wider, knocked the men aside. As the two men fell, Oba staggered through, fighting to keep his balance, and went for the little thief. Clovis skidded to a stop. He looked left, then right. Seeing his chance, Oba lunged for the thief, draped with tattered clothes, but the slight man was able to cut down another street just in time to slip out of Oba's reaching arms. Oba fell short, capturing only a face full of dirt and a small flag of cloth from the man's sleeve. As Oba clambered to his feet, he saw Clovis leap over a fire to the side where people were cooking strips of meat, skewered on sticks, and run back between picketed horses. For such a stooped fellow, he could run like smoke in a gale. But Oba was big and strong and quick. Oba had always prided himself on being light on his feet. He cleared the cook fire with room to spare and ran back between the horses, trying not to lose sight of his prey. The horses spooked at having men racing recklessly between them. Several panicked animals reared, pulling up lines, and bolted. The man watching them, yelling curses and oaths Oba didn't really hear or care about, jumped out in front of him. His attention fixed on the man he was chasing, Oba clouted the irate fellow out of the way. More horses reared. Without pausing, Oba careened after the thief. Oba didn't really need his money back. He had a fortune now. He had more money than he could probably ever spend, even if he was only halfway careful. But this was not about money. This was about a crime, a betrayal. Oba had paid the man, trusted him, and he had been cheated for it. Worse, he had been played for a fool. His mother always told him that he was a fool. Oba the Oaf, she always called him. Oba wasn't going to allow anyone to make a fool of him anymore. He wasn't going to allow his smug mother to be proven right. That Oba had triumphed and come out of the swamp richer than ever was no thanks to Clovis. No, it was thanks only to Oba himself. Just when he thought he was a pauper again, he managed to find the secret to a fortune that was, after all, due him for any number of reasons, the least of which was his long and difficult journey to see Althea, only to have her, too, cheat him out of answers for no more reason than out-and-out meanness. Clovis had plotted it all out and left him for dead. His intention had been to kill him. The fact that Oba had survived was no thanks to Clovis. The man was a murderer, when you thought about it, a killer. The people of Dahara would owe Oba Rall a debt of gratitude after he dealt out swift and just retribution to the wicked little outlaw. Clovis darted around a corner stand displaying hundreds of items made from sheep's horns. Oba, being heavier, shot past the corner, and as he tried to turn, he slipped on horse manure. Through mighty effort and sheer skill, he managed to keep his balance and remain upright. Oba had spent years in such slop, carrying heavy loads, tending animals, and running when his mother yelled for him. He had had to do it in all kinds of conditions, too, including icy weather. In a way, all those years of effort had been practice that had prepared Oba for making the corner when no other man his size and weight would have stood a chance. He made it, and in a smooth and swift fashion that was shocking to the thief. As Clovis glanced back with a mocking grin, apparently expecting that Oba was down for sure, he looked stunned to see, instead, Oba's full weight bearing down on him at full speed. Clovis, obviously spurred on by the terror of knowing justice itself was descending on him, darted down another of the makeshift streets, a smaller and less peopled byway. But this time, Oba was right there behind him. He snatched the flapping rags at a shoulder, spinning Clovis around. The man stumbled, his arms windmilled awkwardly, as he tried to keep his footing and escape at the same time. Clovis's eyes went wide. first from surprise, and then from the pressure of the hand that had clamped around his throat. Whatever sort of squeal or plea was trying to make its way out didn't get past Oba's vice-like fingers. Fatigue forgotten, Oba dragged the murderous little thief kicking and twisting back between two wagons. The wagon's canvas tops shaded the narrow space between them. To the rear of the tight space was a tall wall of crates. Oba's back blocked the constricted opening between the wagon beds, closing off the cramped spot from view as effectively as a prison door. Oba could hear people behind him going about their business, laughing and talking as they hurried by in the brisk air. Others in the distance argued and bargained with merchants over the price of goods. Horses clopped past, their tack jangling. Peddlers plied the streets, calling out the benefits of their wares in a high-pitched sing-song, trying to entice buyers. Only Clovis was silent, but not by choice. The hawker's lying little mouth opened wide, trying to say something. But as Oba lifted him clear of the ground and the man's eyes rolled from side to side, it was clearly a scream for help trying unsuccessfully to escape. With his feet kicking only air, Clovis pried at the powerful fingers around his neck. His dirty fingernails broke backward as he clawed in desperation at the iron fist of justice. His eyes grew as big around as the gold marks he had stolen from Oba. Holding him aloft with one hand, pressing him against one of the heavy wooden crates in the back, Oba searched the man's pockets but found nothing. Clovis desperately pointed at his chest. Oba felt a lump under the tattered layers of rags and shirt. Ripping the shirt open, he saw his familiar fat purse hanging by a leather thong around the thief's neck. A mighty pull burned the thong down into the man's flesh until the leather snapped. Oba slipped his pouch safely back into a pocket. Clovis tried to smile, to make an apologetic face, as if to say that everything was square now. Oba was long past forgiveness. His head pounded with rage unleashed. Holding Clovis's shoulders up against the heavy wooden crates, Oba rammed his fist up into the little man's gut. Clovis was turning purple. Oba threw a heavy punch into the dirty little face. He felt bone break. He whipped his elbow around and into the lying, conniving little mouth and broke out all the front teeth. Oba growled as he walloped the little weasel with three more rapid blows. With each blow, Clovis's head snapped back, his greasy hair throwing back blood each time the back of his skull whacked the crates. Oba was furious. He had suffered the indignity of being a helpless victim of a thief who had left him for dead. He had been attacked by a giant snake. He had nearly been drowned. He had been taunted and tricked by Althea. She had looked into his soul without his permission. She had cheated him out of his answers, belittled him for making something of himself, and died before he could kill her besides. He had suffered through a long march across the Azrith Plains, dressed in rags. He, Oba Rall, practically royalty. The utter indignity was humiliating. He was enraged, and aptly so. He could hardly believe that he finally had the object of that rightful anger at hand. He would not be denied just retribution. Holding Clovis down on the ground with a knee pressed to the man's chest, Oba at last let the full and rightful rage of vengeance free. He didn't feel the blows any more than he felt the aches and pains he had come down with. He cursed the murderous little thief as he dealt out justice, turning Clovis to a bloody pulp. Copious sweat poured down Oba's face. He gasped for air as he slugged away. His arms felt like lead. As he became worn out, he felt his head pounding as hard as his fists. He had trouble focusing on the target of his anger. The ground was soaked with blood. What had been Clovis was no longer remotely recognizable. His jaw was shattered and hung completely unhinged to the side. One eye socket had been altogether caved in. Oba's knee had broken the man's sternum and crushed his chest. It was glorious. Oba felt hands snatching his clothes and arms, pulling him back. He didn't have the strength left to try to stand. As he was dragged backward from between the wagons, he saw a crowd of people formed in a half circle, all stricken with horror. Oba was pleased by that. because it meant that Clovis had gotten what he deserved. Proper punishment for crime should horrify people so as to serve as an example. That's what his father would have said. Oba looked up, closer at the men hauling him out from between the wagons. A wall of leather armor, chainmail, and steel had poured in to surround him. Pikes and swords and axes glinted in the sunlight. They were all pointing at him. He could only blink, too drained to lift a hand to wave them away. Exhausted, out of breath, and soaked in sweat, Oba couldn't hold his head up. As he started to sag in the arms of the men holding him, blackness enveloped him. Chapter 40. In a somber daze, Friedrich used the shovel to steady himself as he sank to his knees. Sitting back on his heels, he let the shovel topple to the cold ground. The chill wind ruffled his hair as well as the long grasses around the freshly turned soil. His world was ashes. Dazed by grief, his mind wouldn't focus on any other thought. A sob overwhelmed him. He worried that he might not have done the right thing. It was cold here. He worried that Althea would be cold. Friedrich didn't want her to be cold. But it was sunny, too. Althea loved sunlight. She always said that she liked the feel of the sun on her face. Despite the heat in the swamp, the sunlight rarely made it down to the ground, at least anywhere near where she could see it from her confinement. To Friedrich, though, her hair was golden sunlight. She would always scoff at such sentiment, but occasionally, if he hadn't mentioned it in a while, she would innocently ask if he thought her hair was brushed enough and looked all right for visitors due for a telling. She always could keep her face blameless when she was angling for what she wanted. Then he would tell her that her hair looked like sunshine. She would blush like an adolescent girl and say, "Oh, Friedrich." Now, the sun would never shine for him again. He had considered what to do and had decided this would be better for her, to be up here, in the meadow, out of the swamp. If he could never take her out of that place in life, at least he could take her out now. The sunny meadow was a better place to lay her to rest than in her former prison. He would have given anything to have taken her out before, to show her beautiful places again, to see her smile, carefree, in the sunlight. But she could not leave. For everyone else, including him, only the path in the front could be safely traversed. There was no other way past the dark things created of her power. For her, there was not even that safe passage. Friedrich knew that the dire consequences for anyone who ventured anywhere else in the swamp were not imaginary. Several times over the years, the unwary or the foolhardy had wandered off the path or tried to make it through the back way, where not even he dared go. It had been torturous for Althea, knowing that her power had ended innocent lives. How Jensen had made it in the back way unharmed, not even Althea knew. For her last journey, Friedrich had carried Althea out that back way as a symbol of her freedom reclaimed. Her monsters were gone. She was with the good spirits now. Now he was alone. Friedrich bent forward in agony, sobbing over her fresh grave. The world was suddenly an empty, lonely, dead place. His fingers clutched at the cold ground covering his love. He felt crushing guilt that he had not been there to protect her. He was sure that if he had been there, she would still be alive. That was all he wanted. Althea alive. Althea back. Althea with him. He had always delighted in returning home, such as it was, to tell her about any little thing he had seen. A bird skimming over a field, a tree with its leaves shimmering in the sunlight, a road lying like a ribbon over rolling hills. Anything that would have brought a little of the world home to her in her prison. In the beginning, he hadn't talked about the world beyond. He thought that if he told her about things he had seen outside her swamp, about what was suddenly out of her reach, she would only feel more confined, more isolated, more heartsick. Althea smiled that special smile of hers and said that she wanted to hear every detail of what he saw, because in that way she could deny Darkenrall his wish to confine her. She said that Friedrich was her eyes, and through them she could escape her prison. With the descriptions Friedrich brought her, Althea's mind soared up and away from her confinement. In that way, Friedrich helped her deny that vile man his wish that she should never again see the world. To that extent, Friedrich could feel good about leaving the swamp when she had to remain behind. He wasn't sure who was giving who the gift. Althea was like that, making him think he was doing something for her, when it was she who was really helping him live his life in the best way he could. Now Friedrich didn't know what he would do. His life seemed suspended. He had no life without Althea. She was a presence that had given him life, given him himself, made him whole. Without her in his life, life was pointless. How her life had ended, Friedrich didn't know for sure. The things he'd found made little sense to him. She hadn't been touched, but the house had been ransacked. The strangest things had been taken, their entire lifetime of savings, along with food, a few odd supplies, and old clothing of little worth. Yet other valuable items were left. Gilded carvings, gold leaf, and tools. Try as he might, Friedrich could make no sense or order out of it. The one thing he did understand was that Althea had poisoned herself. And there had been another cup. She had tried to poison someone else, maybe someone who had come for a telling, someone who hadn't been invited. Friedrich realized, though, that Althea must have been expecting whoever it was, and had kept that knowledge from him, encouraging him to make a trip to the palace to sell his gilded carvings. She had seemed somewhat insistent, and he had thought that, since she had invited no visitors, she must have wanted to be alone for a while, which wasn't entirely unusual. Or perhaps she was just impatient for him to take a little journey out into the world and see some sights, since he hadn't done so in a while. She had held his face in her hands as she kissed him that last time, savoring the feel of him. Now he knew the truth. That long kiss had been her farewell. She had wanted him safely out of the way. Friedrich reached in a pocket and pulled out the note she had left him. She sometimes wrote notes for him, things she thought of while he was away, things she wanted to remember to tell him. He had checked in the gilded cup he had carved for her, which she kept down on the floor under her chair, behind the pillow she sat on, and was surprised to find a letter to him. He carefully unfolded it and read it again, even though he had read it so many times that he knew every word by heart. My beloved Friedrich, I know that you can't understand right now, but I want you to know that I have not forsaken my duty to the sanctity of life. Rather, I am fulfilling it. I realize it won't be easy for you, but you must trust me when I say that I had to do this. I am at peace. I have had a long life, longer by far than nearly any other person is fortunate enough to have. But the best of it was the part I lived with you. I have loved you almost since the day you walked into my life and awakened my heart. Do not let grief crush your heart. We will be together in the next world and for all time. But in this world, you, like me, are one of the four protectors, the four stones at the corners of my grace. You remember. You asked who they were, and I told you that Lethea and I were two of the stones in my last telling. I wish I could have told you then that you are one as well, but I dared not. I am blind to much of what is happening. But with what I do know, I must do what I can, or the chance for others to live and love would be forever lost. Know that you are always in my heart, and will be even when I cross the veil to be with the good spirits. The world of life needs you, Friedrich. Your part in this has yet to begin. I beg of you that when you are called upon, you will fulfill that purpose. Yours for eternity, Althea.